This, once again, is Jim Santel. Morning Cannolis, talking about Roe versus Wade, talking about Casey versus Planned Parenthood, and the fact that those two cases were overruled by the United States Supreme Court this past week in this case out of Mississippi called Dobbs. Right before the break, we were chatting about Justice Thomas's concurrence, which is also getting major headlines because of the starkness and the dramatic nature of what he said, agreeing with the majority, but nonetheless writing separately to say this: that the court should reconsider a number of decisions that go fundamentally to other rights beyond just the abortion rights. Significantly, just by way of introduction, in the majority opinion, Justice Alito sought to allay fears about the wide-ranging nature of the opinion, the very breadth of the language that he was articulating. And he said this, he said, to ensure that our decision is not misunderstood or mischaracterized, we emphasize that our decision concerns the constitutional right to abortion and no other right. Nothing in this opinion should be understood to cast doubt on precedents that do not concern abortion. In his concurring opinion, Justice Thomas plainly disagrees with that, or at least in the world that he would have us be. He says that the court should, in fact, undertake a review of other privacy rights premised cases. He talks about Griswold versus Connecticut. We chatted about this on our second show a couple of weekends ago, 1965 decision that declared that married couples have a right to contraception. Clarence Thomas would have us review a case called Lawrence versus Texas, a 2003 case. We also chatted about this, a case that invalidated sodomy laws, making sodomy a crime and making same-sex sexual activity legal across America. Justice Thomas would have us revisit that case. And the third one is Obergefell versus Hodges, the 2015 case establishing the right of gay couples to marry. Those are the three cases that Justice Thomas would have the Supreme Court take up next under this notion that, well, if there's no longer a privacy right to abortion, these should also fall. And isn't that precisely what many people predicted? We chatted about this very issue, the cascading impact of a decision of the sort that we got just yesterday in Dobbs. And again, the Supreme Court, in its majority opinion, according to Justice Alito, is not going down that road. But the dissent by three other justices plainly says, we'll wait to see. And unlikely that there will be no litigation in those other areas. Undeniably, this opens up those issues, those avenues for attacking those equally fundamental rights, and all goes to privacy rights. We talked previously about Griswold versus Connecticut, this landmark case in which the Supreme Court said, yes, coming out of the Constitution, even though the word contraceptive is not there, the word privacy is not there, you have these penumbras of rights, and various other justices talking about the 14th Amendment, the 9th Amendment, all of them sort of emanating, suggesting you've got rights beyond the narrow language of the Constitution. That notion pretty much rejected by the Supreme Court this past week. Justice Alito articulating a very, very textual basis for his decision, finding that the word abortion does not appear, and therefore, it is not a part of our tradition, not a part of our history, not a part of our jurisprudence in America. Justice Thomas wanting to go even beyond that, even while concurring with the majority in its result, to uphold the contrary to Roe versus Wade legislation out of Louisiana, 15-week abortion ban, plainly encouraging other states down the road to do the same and opening things up. Let's talk about a couple of other concurrences there. Not a lot of attention to this one. This is Justice Kavanaugh saying, as he did during the course of the oral argument, that he feels the Constitution is neutral, neither pro-life nor pro-choice. The Constitution is neutral, he says, and this court likewise must be scrupulously neutral. The court today properly heeds the constitutional principle of judicial neutrality and returns the issue of abortion to the people and their elected representatives in the democratic process. And so, consistent with what Justice Alito was saying, Justice Kavanaugh likewise embracing that, but taking a slightly different linguistic approach, I would offer, saying that, well, we're not we're not simply withdrawing our support, we're becoming neutral. And again, I think that that is perhaps just linguistic gymnastics. And let's revisit once again Justice Roberts, who again, plainly pained by all of this, trying as the Roberts Court, as he lends his name to this court, trying to find some middle ground upon which Roe versus Wade could be maintained while also supporting the legislation coming out of Mississippi. He says that, "I am not sure that a ban on terminating a pregnancy from the moment of conception must be treated the same under the Constitution as a ban after 15 weeks." That's coming from the Chief Justice. That's significant language. A thoughtful member of the court once counseled that the difficulty of a question admonishes us to observe the wise limitations on our function and to confine ourselves to deciding only what is necessary with the disposition of the immediate case. He finally goes on to say, "I would decide the question we granted review to answer whether the previously recognized abortion right bars all abortion restrictions prior to viability, such that a ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy is necessarily unlawful. The answer to that question," Chief Justice Roberts says, "is no. And there is no need to go further to decide this case," taking a shot at the majority of the Supreme Court in his concurrence, nonetheless lending his vote among the six to overrule Roe versus Wade. We have another call on the line. This is Susan. Susan calling in. We appreciate very much your time with us this morning, Susan. Your comment, your question.
Good morning, Jim. I have a question and comment combined. I am interested in the fact that the Supreme Court now has a 25% approval rating, and probably my guess is it's going to go down. But given that the Supreme Court issues these edicts regardless of what apparently the public opinion is, so what happens if people say, "Hey, I'm not going to, you don't have any way of enforcing this. How are you going to make me do it?"
Susan, we'll hold for your other comment, which I appreciate as well. Let me comment about that. I think this is the larger issue, right? That I don't mean to undermine or in any way minimize the huge significance of this case. And it's the things that may follow if other justices, including Justice Thomas, follow on their own plans to again, dropkick privacy rights in many other areas. This is huge. The other point that you're making, Susan, I would offer is equally important. When a great majority of Americans, as you just indicated, simply do not support this, again, the Supreme Court should not be responding every day in and out to polls. But nonetheless, Supreme Court should be reflecting the life and livelihood of America in the 21st century. And when it doesn't do that, and when it is so out of sorts, as you just indicated, Susan, with what Americans think, the great concern is that we begin to say, "You know what? I simply don't have to follow that." Those are people whose opinions are illegitimate. They do not reflect not only mine, but they don't reflect the opinions of a great majority of Americans, on which there can, in fact, be legitimate legal basis, right? We're not simply saying that there are unfounded other views out there. They've been legitimate for 49 and a half, almost 50 years. The concern is the impact down the road that this has on people looking at government and saying it's legitimate and perhaps saying it is not legitimate and moving in different directions. That's when a democracy, a republic like ours, begins to dissolve. That's the other great concern. And that's why your comment, Susan, is so very important. You had another observation to make as well. Go ahead and make that as well, Susan.
Well, it seems to me that this just goes to the fact that the people who are behind this have been working on this for like 40 years. And they weren't particularly, to start with, very interested in the issue, but they figured out that there was a large number of votes that was available if they decided to latch onto them, and that's the evangelical fanatics. They have managed to put everybody together with white nationalists, with toxic masculinity issues, that none of these people seem to have anything in common and probably wouldn't give and you don't care one way or another about the abortion issue. But what I'm saying is that we need to look at this in terms of where do we go from here, because
absolutely,
they're ready for they're ready for us and we're not ready for them.
Susan, your point again, so well taken. Undeniably, this is the result of a years-long plan, a playbook, if you will, beginning with a lot of failures early on. In the early years of the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the Supreme Court and other lower courts adopting and embracing the decision in Roe versus Wade and Casey and saying, you know what, attempts even to limit access to abortion, those we turn back. All along the way, a periodic and clear, if not always successful, movement forward to this day, a playbook that we saw come to complete fruition yesterday. Your invocation, your encouragement to all of us to have a playbook to begin to move in that opposite direction. Your question about what do we do next, that's going to be the subject of our next discussion as well. That's the invocation that all Americans need to think about. A playbook for the future, knowing that this is the law right now. What happens next? We're going to talk about more of that right after the break. And Susan, thank you so much for your comments, your observations. We'll chat more about this right after the break at 847-2789. This is the Shaw WAUK Radio in Waukesha, Wisconsin.